This is Richard Garriott. When the story of my life is written, I suspect there will be chapters on my space exploration, all the video games I've created, and perhaps even how I officiated the first wedding held in zero gravity. But I'm certain there will be no mention of what I'm about to do. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you this week's Texas Tribune Tribcast.
Thank you. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the Tribcast for the last week of August. Joining me is reporter Morgan Smith.
Hello.
Ben Philpott of KUT in the Texas Tribune.
Howdy. Isn't that right? Is that the Ross thing that he says?
It seemed unpleasant the way you did that.
I'm going to say hello one more time. Hello.
Why?
I thought it sounded weird the other time, but let's just continue.
Oh, well, okay. Now that we've returned to our state of normalcy, we can also announce a special guest, Jim Henson, the director of the Texas Politics Project at UT Austin.
Thanks for the invitation, Reeve. I really appreciate it.
I thought that sounded very nice. Yeah, well done.
It was almost sincere.
Yeah. Well, we are going to very sincerely talk about sort of general political chatter, also the latest in redistricting, and finally, education, the new Texas Education Commissioner, and various concerns regarding the topic of education. That sounds sincere enough?
Sure, that was great.
Who watched Ted Cruz's speech at the Republican National Convention?
I did.
And how was it?
It was fairly standard. He went with a lot of the lines that he's used, or that he did use in the Republican primary, talking about a great awakening, which I think I used that line in two different stories that I produced on his run for the Senate for the Republican nomination.
You used him saying that line.
Yes, I used
You didn't repeatedly refer to it as a great awakening.
Every time before he said something, I would say, "You're about to be woken up." But no.
Greatly.
No, he used that. He used, you know, conversation about his father and who is a Cuban immigrant, fled Cuba after being thrown in jail by Castro's forces. He, you know, talked about what he's always talked, you know, liberty and freedom and returning to the Constitution. And it was very much just like any other campaign speech. I think it's a little disappointing. I think that Republicans in Texas were a little disappointed that that so few people got to see it live.
Because a lot of the networks didn't carry it, right? Or at least didn't carry most of it?
The networks were either at commercial break or were doing interviews with people off to the side and did not carry it. I watched it on YouTube myself to be able to get the full speech. You know, he got a good reception. People, I read a couple articles this morning. You know, the delegates, different delegates that were talked to, that weren't in Texas, seemed to be excited about you know, what he brought to the table, which is he's a Tea Partier and he's Hispanic, and he's a really good speaker. I mean, the Senate Republican race showed that he just pretty much wiped the floor with David Dewhurst.
He was the best speaker in the Senate Republican race.
Yes.
I mean, you know, it might be like being like the tallest midget, you know.
Well, there was a lot made about the fact
that wasn't very nice.
There was a lot made about the fact that he went up there and didn't use a teleprompter, which Republicans like to bash President Obama for using teleprompters.
And
he
didn't use the teleprompter notes. Was very much on display at the
right for everyone else. Convention. But yeah. But Cruz got up there and, you know, didn't use notes or a teleprompter. And but again, he also used the same speech that he had mostly used in the campaign, so he should have it down.
Does it matter that this was Texas's big moment in the sun of the convention and the networks didn't air it? Does that say anything? Should we be insulted as well as injured?
Well, I don't think we should be insulted or injured, but I mean, it's an interesting, you know, kind of return to earth for the Cruz phenomena. I mean, I think that there's been all this talk about how this was going to be his coming out moment. I mean, there were people in the immediate aftermath of the Cruz victory, if you'll remember, saying, this is the beginning of a great meteoric, you know, Obama-like trajectory, and that's not what we saw last night.
Well, it had people on both sides trying to look and see whether or not he was eligible to run for president because he was born in Calgary. And it was interesting, you know, watching Fox News throughout the day, Tuesday, they were highlighting pretty much everyone else that was speaking that night, except for Cruz. I mean, they weren't ignoring him. They, you know, they would pop up his name every now and then. But they had sit-down interviews with other people. The Alabama Democrat, African-American Democrat, who switched parties to the Republican Party just this summer, I believe. You know, they had interviews with him. They had, you know, lots on Chris Christie and on Ann Romney. But there wasn't like a big bio story on Cruz heading into his thing last night. NPR had a big bio story on Cruz heading into his speech last night. But
Did it mention the Great Awakening?
It did mention the Great Awakening, yes.
Could you spin that as the national media yet again taking Texas for granted or misinterpreting it?
Oh, you know, I mean...
Or is it really just the end of that meteoric rise
for now? I think expectations were a little inflated to begin with. I mean, clearly the story yesterday was Chris Christie, you know, and Christie stepped up and I think made it, you know, like fulfilled that narrative in the tenor and near as I can tell today, the coverage of that speech. So, Texas pride is, you know, prone to injury in these things. And I think I think Cruz is one of many things going on at the Republican National Convention because it's kind of a done deal here with all respect to Paul, due respect to Paul Sadler.
Can we rewind a little bit? You mentioned Ted Cruz was born in Calgary. Paul Sadler's one bit of media flurry in the week past was he, in an interview with Jay Root of the Texas Tribune, actually said that Ted Cruz should go back to... He said he should go back to Washington, where he's from, or Canada. And people, of course, the headline was Sadler tells Cruz to go back to Canada. Was there anything to be made of that?
Well, in case you don't know, Paul Sadler is the Democrat running for this Senate
race.
He will
not be speaking at his national convention.
No, but, well,
as you well know, I mean, I think that was much ado about nothing. I mean, that was kind of a, you know, he's not Texan kind of argument. Sadler desperately needs free media. He doesn't have any money. You know, whether that was, you know, particularly strategized or it was just him speaking from the cuff, I'm kind of inclined to think the latter. But, you know, I didn't make much of it, really.
And speaking of not making much, there was, you know, a little brief flurry on Sunday after Ted Cruz was speaking at a Faith and Freedom rally down in Tampa and mentioned that as Republicans are counting their blessings, they should be thankful for Hurricane Isaac. Because Hurricane Isaac allowed or made Joe Biden cancel his trip to the Republican National Convention.
Hmm.
It was a joke about the vice president not coming to the convention, but, you know, Talking Points memo, some other Democrat or some other liberal blogs, you know, threw up a bunch of stuff about it, saying on the 7-year anniversary of Katrina, as this hurricane heads straight for New Orleans, we have another elitist Republican who is saying that, you know, making a joke about a devastating storm. Now,
well, if you go back,
and it didn't go very far, really.
Not funny, in poor taste, and, you know, interesting for Cruz, and we haven't seen a lot of these. A rookie mistake,
right? Okay. You didn't see that in the
probably
in
not going to lose in the
primary
election at all.
It's
really not, you know, as far as jokes go, not the most offensive.
Yeah, and just not funny.
Yeah. The one thing that interested me about the Sadler flurry was just that there were people that instantly, like, cried birtherism on him, and when clearly it's not a comparable situation, because Ted Cruz was actually born in Canada, whereas Obama was not born in wherever Leo Berman said
Kenya.
He was born.
Kenya.
Yeah.
You were mentioning,
and his
you
mother's a U.S. citizen, and, you know, I mean, it's...
Yeah, you were mentioning that birtherism thing. I don't get that at all. That
no,
well, like
I was mentioning it and not getting it as well.
Twisted and convoluted and a weird thing.
Yeah, but it seemed very prevalent on Twitter, where the twisted and convoluted analyses... tend to
land.
Yes. Grows like mold.
What about the news from Dewhurst yesterday at the convention, where he said that, you know, he is going to run for re-election?
What about it?
I mean,
I think that's
changes my plans for 2014.
You're not going to run for ag commissioner anymore.
I'm not going to run.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that, you know, it's an interesting thing to raise, Morgan. I mean, I thought that was an interesting foil to the fact that it was supposed to be Cruz's big day, and all of a sudden, Dewhurst shows up, speaks to the caucus, announces he's gonna run, and announces that, you know, he's gonna make vouchers a priority,
right?
Which we'll get to at the end of the show.
And I think that Jay, I guess we were talking to Jay over at KUT yesterday, and he said that Dewhurst came in, big flourish, said, you know, he's all behind Cruz 100%, gave him a big hug, and then kind of stole his thunder by saying, oh, by the way, I'm running for lieutenant governor, which is a big story here in Texas, considering the Republicans that are all lining up to take that job and the Republicans that are lining up behind those Republicans to take the other jobs. And
how binding do you think this announcement is? You know, people are speculating that Perry, who says he's running for re-election, sort of has to do that to not be sort of a lame duck during the upcoming session. Could it just be the same situation with Dewhurst?
Yes.
It could be, especially considering that the Senate in the past has put him to the side and said, we're now, you know, we're going to allow you to stay in the chair, but we're going to run the Senate. That happened a couple of sessions ago. The, you know, Democrats and Republicans got disgruntled with the way he was running it.
Or not running it.
And
I think there might have been a sort of, he might have been sort of hanging out on the side and they stepped in to fill it.
And you know, there were already senators who were very interested in filling that role in this next session. So if you had him kind of half-heartedly come back, you might have seen a similar movement to let him know that he can hang out all he wants on the side and they'll run everything. So maybe this is him asserting himself for the session.
Yeah, I mean, not to be overly parochial about it, but I mean, that was the big Texas story yesterday, I think, was, you know, the combination of Dewhurst making that announcement, but also in the previous 24 hours, naming Tommy Williams chair of finance, reappointing a couple other people in a way of sort of saying, you're still hanging on to your stuff, even though, you know, you really wanted finance, and really activating all this talk about who's going to be the education chair. What are you hearing about that, Morgan?
That is our third topic. You keep trying to steer this to education.
Well, but this is still Dewhurst in the Senate.
We're going to move redistricting to a third topic.
Okay.
Well, I did think it was interesting in Dewhurst's speech yesterday that he specifically called out Dan Patrick and said, I'm looking forward to working with him on school choice legislation.
This is Dan Patrick, who endorsed him in the Senate race.
Yes,
but not Ted Cruz.
No, he did not endorse. How dare you come on my radio show and tell? Oh, wait a minute. No,
he endorsed after that. After that.
Oh, okay.
And the lieutenant governor and Dan Patrick have had a little bit of a contentious relationship in the past. There's some fireworks during the session between them, but they
seem pat down related fireworks.
Pat down related fireworks.
Well, pat down legislation, not patting down the two of them. Yeah.
So it has been interesting to see. I don't know. It has been interesting to see kind of the thawing of that relationship in the way. Because we know that Dan Patrick is often mentioned as somebody who maybe would like to be lieutenant governor, but he also has his eye on the education chairmanship. So I think it might be a little bit too easy to interpret Dewhurst saying, you know, I'm gonna work with Dan Patrick on this kind of pet piece of conservative education policy in school choice as a nod that he is going to pick him as education chair. I think it could just as easily be kind of a consolation saying, I'm going to let Senator Patrick be the star of this school choice voucher show and give somebody else the education chair.
Who would be that person, or who are the other candidates?
I think it's pretty much between Senator Kel Seliger and Senator Patrick. And they both kind of come from, they're both, as far as in terms of when you look at the school districts that they represent, you see Kel Seliger, who's from rural areas, but he does have some big cities in Midland and
Amarillo,
that's right. So he has kind of a wider range of a wider variety of school districts, whereas Dan Patrick is, of course, in Houston, so he has some of the big urban and suburban school districts. So that's kind of another way to look at the way they might handle education issues.
Was Seliger upset not to get the name drop at the RNC?
I don't think he should be. I spoke with him this morning, actually. I didn't ask him that question, but I did ask him how he felt about school choice voucher type legislation. And he was very kind of measured in the way that he responded. He said, you know, I'm open to it, but I think, you know, as we learned in the committee hearing that we had, which Dan Patrick led last week on the topic, that there really are so many nuances to the way these programs can be structured, and it's just
difficult to come out and say, yes, I'm for this, yes, or no, I'm not.
Well, and especially, I mean, the rural Republicans were many of the lawmakers that, you know, joining in with Democrats that killed this back in 2003, 2005, 2007.
Right.
Yeah, and, I mean, there's a lot of underlying dynamics here. I mean, if you look at the Patrick Seliger contrast, you know, these are guys that are thought of as being two different wings of the Republican caucus in the Senate. I mean, Seliger was one of the three or four kind of key players that are, you know, closer to the middle, you know, less conservative than a Dan Patrick, who has really styled himself as the spokesman for the Tea Party coalition, as the spokesman for, you know, the quote-unquote true conservatives in the Senate. You know, Seliger was one of the guys that Michael Quinn Sullivan tried to go after ineffectively. And so there's a lot of underlying tension here, and Dewhurst inserts himself, you know, in this in a very interesting way. I mean, the fact that Dewhurst, can't remember what to use the figure of speech, that Dewhurst and Patrick seem to be kind of making nice is an interesting thing.
And it was interesting the way that Dewhurst phrased his support for school choice. He said, I'm going to be working with Senator Patrick on hammering out the details of school choice legislation or something like that, and then kind of said, I think in a subsequent interview, that, you know, I don't know how I feel about vouchers. I think, you know, I think they're a good option, but was not, you know, was not kind of full throated in his endorsement of that policy.
But hasn't he already said that vouchers are going to be one of like the major issues of the upcoming session?
So Senator Patrick said that. Yeah.
I think it'll be really interesting to see how this all plays out in the House, because you have some Tea Party Republicans in the House that are from rural areas where, you know, in the Senate, you've got these giant swaths of land that you're, so, you know, Seliger, he can play to the urban, but he still has to worry about the rural. In the House, you've got these rural Tea Party Republicans who ideology, you would say, are all for it, but the truth back home is that, well, what are vouchers going to do for us? We have to drive 2 hours to the next school district.
Right. And I mean, you see that in that contrast between the House and the Senate in terms of the size of the districts and education issues a lot, because with House members, they are much more susceptible to the influence of the school board members, of the superintendents, who are often, you know, pretty powerful in rural communities, and just in a smaller district in general, they have, I think, a chance to wield more influence. But I will say, back on the subject of the underlying dynamics, I went back and I read up on kind of the voucher fights of the past. And
fun weekend.
Yeah.
That's the Criterion Collection. Put that out recently.
Senator Corona is actually, back in 2000, was one of the lone Republicans the Republican who basically prevented the Senate from taking up one of the last bills that, like, actually had a chance of passing that would have enacted voucher legislation. And he's been pretty outspoken against vouchers when it has come up. So I think, given the dynamic between Senator Corona and Senator Patrick, that could make for some interesting
fights. Which, to review, is not good.
Right.
Well, it'll be interesting. You know, Patrick has said that the Republicans are going to make the vouchers this year's voter ID. So, you know, Corona can be against it, and the Democrats, and if they get Wendy Davis back, can be against it, and that would keep it from coming up to the floor. But not if they do a Senate rule change at the beginning of the session, like they did with the voter ID, so that everything else has to go through the 2/3 rule except for school vouchers. And that, I think that'll let you know exactly how close they are on finding any consensus. If they push for a rule change, then they probably know that the Democrats and you know, moderate, however you want to phrase it, Republicans are not for it.
And the other thing about vouchers is that sometimes you will find minority Democrats from, like, kind of inner urban areas who are in favor of them. And so it's...
But that's more of a House thing, isn't it? I mean, for a compact district like that, or...
Yeah, but I still think, you know, you might find some that might be susceptible to persuasion along those lines, so it's...
Yeah, I mean, to the extent that it's an odd signature issue, given all this Tea Party stuff, and there's so many weird cross-cutting cleavages on this, I mean, I think what you would look for is that you'll get some very finely crafted legislation if they do get something on the floor that will, you know, include carve-outs to get votes from some of these urban Democrats in the House.
Well, that was the great thing about the last time they tried this in the House. They had everyone lining up. All the urban House members were lining up with their carve-outs, including Todd Baxter from Western Travis County, who had his carve-out for the Westlake, the Eanes ISD. And they pulled the bill before his carve-out could be brought up to the floor. And that was it. He was at the Texas Cable Association pretty much just a couple months after that.
Well, what will our new education commissioner, Michael Williams' role be in this conversation? What is it? Does he have an opinion on this stuff? And does his opinion matter very much?
He does. And I think a lot of, you know, some people who are watching this and paying attention to this, you might even say that Michael Williams was chosen to be the figurehead at TEA who is in favor of vouchers and school choice. He hasn't talked about it very recently at all. For the past 12 years, he's been at the Railroad Commission. But in his...
They don't regulate schools.
they don't regulate schools.
Do they regulate railroads? No.
When you said very recently, I thought you meant like in recent, like the last few weeks of interviews that he's given.
Well,
you mean the last dozen years.
But you can't now frack and play games.
I meant both.
That's right.
Yes. But he...
Are you allowed to say that? Because this is not going out on
this
the radio.
This is not Battlestar Galactica.
To say frack?
Yes.
That's not a bad word.
Right.
It is.
Except on Battlestar Galactica.
and among some environmentalists.
I was in front of that idea.
All right, let's go back to Michael Williams.
So anyways...
Forget fracking.
We've established the geek cred. We can move on.
But he is...
Even Morgan jumped in on the Battlestar Galactica.
I like Battlestar Galactica. Anyways.
And reading about voucher history.
That may be the quote of the Tribcast.
People want to hang out with Morgan this weekend. She will be huddled up with her voucher histories, watching some sci-fi.
Watching, trying to figure
some
out
BSG.
That last season and what it really meant.
But Michael Williams is in support. He does support school choice programs. He, in the 90s, he was involved with a conservative think tank that its kind of primary role was to advocate against racial preferences and admissions at universities. And this was kind of when the Hopwood decision was being litigated in Texas and at the Supreme Court, and also to push for school choice voucher type programs. So it's definitely an issue that he is acquainted with and is kind of on the same side of the governor. And so I think you can look at his role at the TEA, whether, you know, at the same time that the governor appointed Michael Williams, he also appointed Lizette Reynolds, who as kind of his chief second in command person. And she's been at the TEA for a long time. So I think you can see that, you know, Michael Williams is probably going to be the public face of the agency, while Lizette Reynolds is going to be behind the scenes doing the day to day operations. So, I mean, I think, you know, obviously it's a very political thing, and I think you can definitely look at that role in terms of the debate that's coming over vouchers.
It's also a very nice thing to do for Michael Williams that he doesn't have to lose another race.
Give him a soft landing.
Yes.
He must have won a Railroad Commission race at some point.
Yes.
I think he won like four.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's
been a dry couple of years for Michael Williams, though. He's been looking for offices to run for. And
then when he found one, it didn't go too well.
Right.
If he had known about the education commissioner gig, maybe he wouldn't have
could have just kicked
the time.
Back.
Yeah. Oh, well. You know, hindsight is 20/20.
You got to write that down. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure that's how we'll feel at the end of, once we have our redistricting maps. Yeah. At the end of this podcast, Morgan will regret
what I was going to say.
That's where I thought you were going.
Let's just transition.
Let's transition to redistricting. There was a decision earlier this week.
Yeah, also known as yesterday.
Yeah, so
well,
no,
you
when
know
are we actually going
to
be able to flip
to this?
This?
Right, that's true.
Yeah. Jim, can you talk to us about this?
Yeah, basically, you know, this is where Ross would give a brief, pithy history, and I'll do my best to be Ross-like in that. But, you know, because of Texas's history and the provisions of the Voting Rights Act. When Texas changes the electoral system, it has to get what's called pre-clearance, and there are two routes. You can either be pre-cleared by the Justice Department or pre-cleared by an appeals court, a federal appeals court in D.C. Greg Abbott, in trying to get the maps drawn by the Texas legislature pre-cleared, opted to avoid the Justice Department after making very public arguments that Eric Holder and the Justice Department were biased against Texas and all things right and conservative, and went to this appeals court, which has been taking a while. They had extensive hearings, took a lot of testimony, lots of briefs. Yesterday, they basically declined to pre-clear the state legislative maps or the congressional maps. They let the State Board of Education maps be. So what this means is that those initial maps that did become the basis for the maps we have now, with some alterations, I think are effectively dead. Now, Attorney General Abbott announced immediately, and either they hadn't read the opinion yet or he is a very fast reader, that they were going
could be both
that they were going to that they were of course going to appeal this decision. But for now, it
to
was
to the U.S. Supreme
to
Court.
To the U.S. Supreme Court. And this was a rousing defeat. If you read the opinion, and the opinion is long, I've read most of it. I mean,
and there you are, Megan Morgan.
I knew that was coming. Yes, yeah. It's hard to know.
Were you
the
watching?
Geek.
What were you watching while you were reading the opinion?
I'm not going to say.
Probably so, The Wire or something like that.
As long as it wasn't The Newsroom.
I thought we should talk about The Newsroom. At any rate, they basically...
Bad. That's my quick review.
What they basically found was that in the case of the congressional maps and the House maps, that there was what's called retrogression, which is the new maps fell back from the previously established level of minority ability to elect to... participate meaningfully in the process and elect their own officials. In the case of the Senate map, interestingly, what they found was that there was evidence of discriminatory intent, which the Voting Rights Act says you can't have. And in the aftermath of a 2006 addition to the Voting Rights Act, pretty strong language was added that made it – that put the burden on the state to prove that there was no discriminatory intent. And Texas did not do that to the court's satisfaction. And we were talking before the podcast started, if you go and read the decision, if you really want to be, you know, have a good time. Sections, I think it's 2, 3, and 4 basically talk about how the court looked at each specific map. And the Senate section in particular is pretty interesting in terms of talking about kind of cracking open the process, if you will, and looking at the to and fro and the maneuvering that went on in the Senate based on testimony from the map drawers, from people in the – from both senators and staffers about the process. So the takeaway is that those maps are now pretty much dead in the water. I think even if Abbott appeals, it's going to be hard by the time this all winds its way through to go back to those maps, even if they were to win. And I think Abbott is actually hunting bigger game here. The language and the intent, I think, has been there all along to challenge the Voting Rights Act and to bring the Voting Rights Act, and in particular Section 5, which is the preclearance section, to the Supreme Court. And, you know, they may well get that. They're at least going to get they're at least going to ask the court to hear it. And so it's going to be ultimately about more than the maps. It's going to be about the Voting Rights Act, which is, you know, a cause that's near and dear to the heart of, you know, the right end of the Republican Party, because it really involves federalism issues and these notions of state prerogatives and state rights, and that's something obviously that Abbott has kind of hung his hat on as a politician.
So if he gets that to the court, does that mean that he then triumphantly challenges Rick Perry for the governorship?
I think there's, you know, reasonable people can disagree about that. I mean, clearly, Abbott wants to run for something else. There's discussion about whether it will be governor or lieutenant governor. I've been talking to people that feel, you know, inside the process, like Abbott would not challenge Perry, that there's just sort of an agreement there. I am not entirely convinced of that, but I'm also, you know, I've never been in the room with the guys.
Let's just play it out. Let's say he gets
it out quickly.
He gets to the Supreme Court. He wins the case. I mean... And with all that money in his campaign account, you can't just sit on that and say, boy, I can't wait to go back to the Attorney General's office. I mean, that's political clout and capital that I think he has to spend somewhere.
Well, no, I think what people are talking about now in the wake of this Dewhurst announcement is, you know, if Perry runs, does Abbott challenge Dewhurst and jump in that race?
Todd Staples has already left the door open to challenge Dewhurst, as has Jerry Patterson.
Well, Jerry Patterson hasn't left the door open.
He's left the door open and charged through it with his rifle.
He blew it off the hinges, you know, pulled
the
knob off
that he cares
and threw it at Dewhurst. Yeah.
I have a quick question about the maps.
Oh, we're out of time.
Well, I'm going to ask it anyways. So does this mean that during the session that we go back and redraw the maps again to make them more... you know, minority-esque or
more
friendly.
Did you say minority-esque?
Well, I think, wasn't that the ruling from San Antonio that, so here are the temporary maps, but next time you go back in session, redraw the maps anyway?
Yeah, they're going to, you know, we're going to look at new maps. They will be producing new maps, but all of this goes into, like, what the considerations are going to be.
And right? The maps that we are voting to have people represent in November,
mm-hmm. That's the interim map.
Temporary maps.
Those are the San Antonio maps.
Those have not really been affected by this.
Well, they might be. Malk, there was an article in the Rio Grande Guardian
is a thing.
This morning, in which, you know, Malk is, you know, Trey Martinez Fisher and the MALDEF lawyers are sending signals that they may well use the arguments in this decision to seek injunctive relief on the maps in November.
There's
a precedent for that.
The temporary maps were based on the legislative maps. So if the legislative maps didn't make preclearance.
Right. The court made... You know, the court was ordered to base the current maps on the legislative maps out of deference to the will of the state legislature.
All right. So with that cliffhanger ending, if you could submit your own ending,
right?
How you think it's
or your own map,
or your
maybe,
comments
right?
or complaints, TV show recommendations right. to right. Tribcast.
One of those maps will lead you to a base star.
Yeah, Tribcast at TexasTribune.org. On behalf of Jim, Morgan, Ben, our producer Todd, and our audience member Rodney, this is Reeve. Thanks for listening.
You're just stupid.
Yeah, you're just stupid. Neener, neener, neener. You're just a moron.